The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It is a jam-packed week in the sports world, and we're going to break it down for you right here on The Brad Sessmatt Show on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Jordan Hamm, going to be the host all week, hosting the TV show. We have a great show here throughout on Fox Sports Arizona. We're going to be talking to Cynthia Freeland of the NFL Network, analytics expert. I always feel like I get smarter whenever I talk to her about football. She's going to be on the show here in a little bit as well. Brandon McGee going to be on the TV show. Made moves in Tempe, now making moves in Hollywood. There's so much to go over with him. A really cool story about what's going on. But right now, we have NFL free agency kicking off. We have March Madness in full swing with GCU going. Paul Coro going to be joining us in just a little bit of GCULopes.com to talk about the matchup with number 2, Iowa. Can they be a Cinderella? And what made this team so different from past ones? You remember all those teams with Dan Marley the past couple of years getting so close, but it always felt like New Mexico State was standing in the way. GCU able to reach that new height, punch their ticket to March Madness. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But we're going to start with our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate all of their support. And real quick, want to do a quick story about Desert Financial Credit Union. We did the story on Kristen Muir a few months ago of, you know, former kicker over at Marco Stanisa. She made national headlines. She was a record setter, was in a rollover accident. Currently paralyzed from the waist down, but she's working her way back. I've been in contact with their family quite a bit. She is rehabbing. She is, you know, going through this as best she can, but she's doing really well. She is home now. I got an email from Desert Financial, unprompted, just, hey, how can we help? We want to help with medical equipment. We want to give her an Oculus virtual reality deal. We want to give workout clothes for when she's rehabbing. All this unprompted, and they just wanted to support Kristen, and they wanted to support us. So if you like that story, if you like what we're all about, make sure to support the people that support us, and that's Desert Financial Credit Union, definitely. So appreciate all of their support. But got a lot to get to. We're going to bring in Claudia Faust. Claudia, how you doing?
I'm doing good this morning. It's kind of harder for me to wake up when it's like not super sunny out, but I'm not complaining. It's kind of nice to actually have a change of scenery in Arizona besides just constant sunshine.
We got a little weather this weekend. It was kind of nice. Did. I met up with you and dropped off a camera in a downpour. And that felt like it was kind of we were right in the thick of it for those 2.5 minutes we were talking.
Oh, for sure. And it was totally unexpected. I had no idea because I was working in my office where I usually have the blinds closed, and here everywhere else in my apartment, everything's wide open because I just love natural sun. But I was like, oh, I need to like dig out a rain jacket and an umbrella. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I moved to the desert. What's going on?
I felt so bad. So my fiance that day, she was volunteering at State Farm Stadium with the vaccinations. She had an 8-hour shift, 2 to 10. And much of it was in the rain. And from what I heard, she was one of the few stations that didn't have cover, didn't have a heater. She was out in the thick of it. So I certainly felt for her, but she still said a very rewarding experience. But yeah, it was, I was like, you know, in the apartment, had the heat going, was grilling up some food for the weekend, and she was just out there slumming it. So, but yeah, nice to get a little bit of weather. And yeah, we have plenty to talk about here. An hour ago, the legal tampering period in the NFL just started. You can start negotiating with free agents, can't make it official until Wednesday. But is first off, Claudia, is there a funnier term in sports than legal tampering?
It's just so confusing. I just don't even, you're talking to people who enjoy sports, so make it easy for them to understand. That at least is the case for me. So I have to agree with you. It's a little awkward, and I feel like there has to be a better word or just like a more clear definition.
Right. It felt like it's like, well, tampering's bad, but this is
the legal
kind.
So
we'll just make it legal. So it's like negotiation period, whatever. But It's also like, I saw a funny tweet from Lindsey Jones of The Athletic, and she was like, so excited for agents and teams to start talking for the first time in roughly 4 minutes or what. And it's like, come on, we know what's going on. But yeah. Anyway, lot going on. A lot of NFL news on the Cardinals side. Andy Lee, a 1 year contract. Marcus Golden, a 2 year contract. Right now, they, I believe, just released, you know, who they're tendering. So there's a lot going on here with the Cardinals. Obviously, at the top of the list, the big names, Larry Fitzgerald, Patrick Peterson, two staples of the Arizona Cardinals the past decade plus. Not sure what their future is going to be. And Claudia, I know we've talked a lot off air of like, what's our game plan? If news should break, it feels like, you know, it's got to be coming up here soon. Larry hasn't waited this long in quite a while. You had Drew Brees retire this weekend. So it's been kind of it's a fun holding pattern that we're in on what the decision's going to be for both Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson, whether they stay or go.
I am always in this weird spot where I'm just like, I felt like Larry was probably retiring because that's just kind of what everybody's been saying and talking about. But as time goes on, and I know that's just how it works, but as time goes on, I'm like, oh, he's not retiring. And that's just like the feeling I tend to get as time passes. I'm like, the news needs to break. Yeah, you don't want to overshadow Drew Brees. Like, that needed to be his day and his thing. Like, obviously he deserved full attention on him. And we all knew it was coming. I mean, we saw the final game, Tom Brady and him shaking hands, words on the field. Like, you just knew. But there's something now about Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson, I guess, where I just don't feel like it's happening. And that's, I have absolutely no basis for saying this other than time has passed. And as time has passed, I become more and more confused. So I don't know if you would agree with me on that, but I'm starting to wonder, it's not coming out.
I feel like it's the opposite for me with Larry. It's like the longer it goes, I feel like maybe that's more and more likely. Okay, I'm just going to step away. You know, one way or the other, the Cardinals are going to have to figure out a budget. And they will, if there's anybody a franchise will wait for, the Arizona Cardinals will wait for Larry Fitzgerald. And I'm sure they might have a clearer picture than what us on the outside know. But yeah, the longer it goes, I feel more and more like, maybe he just wants to, you know, go golf and travel, and he's got a lot of endeavors outside of the field. But that's kind of where we stand right now with Larry Fitzgerald. News that just came down. The Cardinals tendered contract offers to Dennis Gardeck, Zeke Turner, and Kylie Fitz as well. So Gardeck felt like was a fan favorite, was actually really productive last year, especially once guys started to get injured. You saw Hassan Reddick go down, Chandler Jones. What was, I think, presumed to be a special teams player actually played quite a bit and played well. Real quick, before we shift gears to GCU, one other thing. Peter King did his weekly column, and mentioned the rich pass rush market that's out there right now. Typically, it's pretty thin, and that's why those pass rushers get those big contracts, and they usually get them quicker. But for some reason this year, it's a pretty deep class. So he was pointing to a group that might be not the elite tier, but kind of that next tier. Part of that is Hassan Reddick, who the Cardinals did not franchise tag. But he pointed out that it could be a month. What he says is, quote, a month from now, two or three of these players will be unsigned and have massive chips on their shoulders, almost certain to be smart one-year buys when they reestablish a market for 2022, end quote. He also references later that could be in the $4 to $5 million range. That's right around where Marcus Golden signed. So what was perceived to be maybe Hassan Reddick's moving on, maybe there's a little window here if Peter King is correct on what's going on with them. But real quick, let's shift gears here to GCU. Punches their ticket to March Madness. History was made this past weekend. They won the WAC tournament over New Mexico State. That was kind of the last barrier in front of them. They hit the finals multiple times the past couple of years, not able to get it done. But they were this year in dominating fashion, 18-point win. And now they get to face the number 2 Iowa Hawkeyes and one of the best players in the state, or in the country, I should say, a walking double-double and one of the highest-powered offenses in the country. So, Claudia, pretty cool to see U of A not in taking their self-imposed sanctions. ASU had their struggles, but we still have a team from Arizona heading to the big dance.
Absolutely. They're obviously... They have a big following from what I've learned. I remember when I started at ASU hearing about students camping out for season tickets or people camping out for season tickets for the men's basketball game. So I know it's a big deal and there's a big following there. The thing that I think is going to be the struggle, I can't believe because I'm so not a numbers person that I'm bringing this up, but I looked at the statistics and it's only only 5% of teams that were in the 15 seed have actually beaten the number two seed. And Iowa's a tough team to beat. I like the walking double-double reference, but I just think it's kind of, it's going to be a confidence thing. Obviously it's going to be a basketball thing, but I also think it's going to be a confidence thing and just believing you're above those statistics. And obviously they've already made history this year since it's the first time they're actually making it into the tournament and doing this thing. So I think it'll be fun to watch, but it's going to be kind of just a nail biter game, even if, you know, it starts slow, whatever it might be. It's very cool to have GCU in the tournament, but it's just like now that it's happening, it's all the scary feelings of what's going to happen next.
The odds are certainly against 15 seeds historically, but I think there are two things that help out GCU. One, they're a top 10 defense. Even when you're shooting poorly, what can keep you in a game? Good defense. Now they're going up against, I believe, like a top five offense. So that's going to be kind of the immovable object, unstoppable force debate that always goes on when these matchups start to happen. The other thing, and Paul Coro is going to be coming up next, and this is something that he pointed out to me a little bit earlier, was they're battle tested. They went up against ASU, and yes, ASU struggled this year, but they had talent on their roster, and it came down to the last shot. And they barely lost to ASU. They played a really good Colorado team, held their own. They've been battle-tested, so they try to play up. But it's just interesting to me that 2 years from today, a year ago, so March 17th, 2020, Bryce Drew was hired. Think about where the world was March 17th, 2020. So
can we
they
not?
Hired, yeah, right, right, yeah. A quick little glance, and then we just look ahead and pretend like it didn't happen. But when he was hired, it was, when is basketball going to come back? Is it going to be 2021? Is it going to be 2022? The fact that one, they were able to put out a really good product and a really good team is really impressive. Also, the fact that they were able to navigate most of their season and we had a pretty full college basketball season, I think is very impressive considering where we were just a year ago. So a lot to look forward to. We have two great guests on this show today. Paul Coro, he's going to break down those GCU chances and what has made this team stand out from others, how they were able to punch their ticket for the big dance. And then we also have Cynthia Freeland coming up talking about the early Cardinal moves, J.J. Watt, where they may go from here. Again, I say this every single time she comes on, but I always feel like I get a little bit smarter when it comes to football whenever she comes on the show. So both of those guests coming up next here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Well, history was made this past weekend with the GCU Lopes punching their ticket to March Madness. So we thought here on the Brad Sesmatt Show, I'm Jordan Hamm, and we thought we would have Paul Coro, senior writer of GCULopes.com, hop on with us to talk all things Lopes basketball. Going to be a very exciting week coming up. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jordan. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you as well. So take me through what yesterday was like. From your perspective, I saw that there was a big pep rally going on at the stadium. You know, the players are already in transition going to Indianapolis. What was it like for you, who's covered this team for a long time, seen them get close quite a few times to finally get over the hump and make it to the tournament?
Yeah, very much a whirlwind day because Sunday really started still in the bowels of Orleans Arena, you know, the aftermath, you know. I'm working, finishing up coverage of the championship game for the GCLopes.com site, and the coaches are still there. They were like in a conference room, kind of huddled up, and all, you know, they're in the room next to me. I could still hear them like talking, laughing. They're planning ahead for what was it. They barely slept because the NCAA basically has a plane waiting for whoever wins to go immediately to Indianapolis. They go into quarantine. They barely get there in time to get in a conference room and do the selection show on CBS. Meanwhile, back at GCU, they had a planned event at the arena for students to watch the selection show. A restricted number, about 500 in the arena, turned it into, of course, like a purple pregame party and everything. And so it was pretty cool that there was two fronts of celebrations going on.
Mm-hmm. So much of last week, we saw people highlighting where they were a year ago when the pandemic hit and things really shut down. 2 days from now will be the 1 year anniversary that Bryce Drew was hired. When you think back to that day, could you envision them making the NCAA tournament and us even having an NCAA tournament this year?
Wow. Yeah. All of that would have been difficult. You know, you didn't really know what immediate impact Bryce Drew and really his staff too. You have to include a very Power Five experienced staff that impact the program too. And what they brought in as far as the buy-in from the returners, also bringing somebody back into the fold, Oscar Freire, who had been out of the program for a year, and helping him get his path back on with academics and athletics. I mean, he had to come from a year of not playing basketball and get himself back into conditioning and then to become a starter again. And then, of course, one of the biggest moves was the additions they made to the roster. And the biggest one, of course, being literally big, 7 foot, 270 pound Asbjørn Midtgaard, just a mountain of a man, a Viking from Denmark. He is so skilled and talented. It's amazing that he didn't play more in 3 years at Wichita State, because he was arguably could have been the player of the year in the WAC, and he leads the nation in field goal percentage. And, you know, they're about to play a double-double machine in Luka Garza at Iowa. Well, Asbjørn Midtgaard's been a double-double machine. He's at 11, and he's had like six of those in the last eight games.
With Coach Drew, this past year, you talked about kind of the roster composition that he was able to tweak and fine tune, but how did he get his fingerprints on this program in 1 year to make sure that they're reaching new heights here early on in his tenure with GCU?
Well, it goes back to the summer when they finally got to get in the gym with him. You know, for a long time, he took the job in March and, you know, he couldn't even be on campus yet. We're in full throes of the pandemic. You know, nobody was traveling. Nobody was having, you know, contact. So it wasn't until the summer when they finally got in the gym. And even then it was very restricted. They were in groups rather than team. But he laid a foundation of work, some serious like conditioning, some serious skill work, some very formatted practices where there was no wasted time. And that started working into the fabric, but also a cultural shift where like, part of the attraction for him to the job was being a Christian university, and he wanted to weave a faith component more into the program where they, you know, pray together at every practice. They pray after in a circle after every game, win or lose. And so that's been a big part of the attraction for Bryce Drew to be that person. And he seems more moved by how they've progressed as people as much as players to this point. And you can see the connection with the guys. Like, he's gotten three locker room showers this season. You know, when they swept New Mexico State, they were waiting with him with water bottles. Then it got a little bit more serious when they clinched the WAC co-championship against Utah Valley. Then it was a water cooler. And then Saturday night, he came in there and they had two ice bath water coolers waiting for him in the locker room. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that shows you how players feel about a coach.
Mm-hmm. Dan Marley, the past couple of years, helped build this program to what it was, but that this program never was able to. They made some really good runs in the WAC tournament. They weren't able to get over that hump. What is it about this team in particular that you think they were able to hit that final mark of, okay, we're going to make it to the NCAA tournament?
I think the defense is on another level. They're number two in the nation for opponent field goal percentage, behind only Houston. And so they've had their ups and downs with outside shooting. And, you know, they're also learning a system that, you know, oftentimes you, when you get to this point in a postseason, you're playing teams with players that have been in a system for 3 or 4 years. And these guys are all in their first year of it. So they've just played their best basketball these last three games. And, you know, they had a 34-point semifinal win in the WAC tournament. And they just routed New Mexico State by 18. And that's the perennial power of the conference that had gone to the tournament 8 or 9 years. So they've leaned on that defense and their low moments and their high moments. So when they're rolling offensively, they can really do damage. But even on those nights where they're struggling with their ball movement or their shooting or whatever, they stay in games because of defense. And we've seen that all the way back to December when they took ASU down to a buzzer shot. Remy Martin hit an incredible corner one to beat them. They beat Nevada back then. They're the only one of two teams that shot over 50% against Colorado this season. So those type of games, even though they didn't win every one of them, that showed them the level that they could play at.
Jovan Blackshear is a local from Shadow Mountain. Even when we were covering him in the prep level, I feel like he was respected, but always a little bit underrated as well. He's on an absolute tear the second half of this year specifically. What have you seen out of him to help set the tone defensively, but also get to the rim quite a bit?
Boy, tone setter is a great term for him, because if you've seen him back to Shadow Mountain, he's one of the most even keeled players you'll ever see. And what a quality to have in a point guard as your floor leader and your playmaker, who's never too high or too low. And he's a two way player. He doesn't just run the team. He's not just a scorer. He turned into a scorer last game. That was the best he's ever shot. He's been really working on that perimeter shot. He was freshman of the year last year, and now he's elevated to All-WAC second team and a WAC tournament MVP. And he, you know, like you said, he might have been a little bit overlooked in those Shadow Mountain state title years. Jalen House got a little bit more notoriety, maybe because NBA father going to Arizona State and all that, and Blackshear, because of his size, maybe didn't get recruited as much. But man, he makes up for that size. He's one of the best rebounders on the team. He's amazing. At 5'11", he finds his way to balls, and then he uses his size really craftily too. Like he pokes at balls. It's amazing how he keeps control of a dribble low to the ground, because he's already low to the ground. You know, like a loose ball, he'll just kind of keep. He looks like he's like a Marine on all fours dribbling sometimes, but. Yeah, he's really risen his game, and that experience of playing every day for 2 years is starting to show. And I think even in high school, Shadow Mountain being on such a national level as a program gave him a calmness about big situations. They were playing on ESPN back then, so playing on ESPN Saturday night was no big deal to him.
And looking ahead now to Iowa, the number two seed, you talked about Luka Garza, their high-powered offense going head-to-head against GCU's top 10 defense that they have. What do you foresee here early on in this matchup, now that we know it for all of about 18 hours so far, but initial reactions of that matchup?
Initial reaction is, good thing it's not till Saturday, so they have a lot of time to prepare, because holy cow, what an offense. And you're dealing with a guy who could be the two-time player of the year. And, you know, one of the initial things I was looking at was, at least they have size to counter Garza. And you saw in the Big Ten semifinals that Kofi Coburn gave Garza problems. Now, Midgard's not as big as Kofi Coburn. I don't know who is, but Garza shot 8 of 21 in that game. And that might be about as good as you can do against a guy like Luka Garza. But they got shooters galore on that team. The Lopes have been a very good team about defending the three-point line so far. They work really hard on going over screens to deny shooting teams. So they're used to playing against that sort of thing. But they're going to – and Iowa's much improved on defense. That's probably what has turned that program from the success they've had recently to where they are now under Fran McCaffrey. They're much better. They're not an elite defensive team, but they're a much better one. So the Lopes are just going to have to be on the level that they played the last three games and then raise it another bar. But you don't have to worry about motivation anymore with this team. They've been a different sort of locked in for about a week and a half now, and this will not change that.
Paul, thanks so much for the insight. Very exciting week for the program. Appreciate you jumping on with us.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
That is Paul Coro, GCULopes.com senior writer, and this is the Brad Sesmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and we've had this guest on a few times in the past, and she always brings the stats. She always brings the facts. And I feel like we always get a little bit smarter when it comes to football whenever she joins us. She is the NFL Network analytics expert, Cynthia Freeland. You can follow her at C Freeland. Cynthia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm like an unofficial Arizona resident because my parents have moved there. So I feel very connected to the state now.
Yeah. And a lot to talk about with the Cardinals and a lot going on here in the NFC West. So excited to chat with you. So going to be a busy offseason. We can tell already there's already been some major moves. I think the Cardinals might have made the biggest move so far, at least biggest non-quarterback move in adding J.J. Watt. Just what's your first impression of adding J.J. and a healthy Chandler Jones to the front seven for the Arizona Cardinals?
I definitely think, especially in the NFC West, shoring up the pressure potential is a huge impact play. So it may be that the J.J. Watt deal, as terms of dollars and cents, was a little rich. But if you have a plan and you execute it early, you've seen them back it up with, like, just now signing Robert Alford, one of the corners, and for a very minimum price. So you really get a chance to create a cohesive strategy. So again, in this offseason where there's a lot of defensive ends and pass rushers available out there, but to varying degrees of, well, who do you like and what do you expect them to do? So if you're looking to see which one do you want, maybe you do have to actually pay for the J.J. Watt and then create the system around him. So I think it's really smart, especially this is a really tough division. And, you know, unless Russell Wilson leaves, we got, you know, like it, the quarterback potential went up, you know, so.
With Vance Joseph, how does he best utilize J.J. and his versatility?
Well, the interesting part about Vance, and I love the back end of this defense. I'm like an unapologetic Buda Baker, like, lover. I love what he brings. I love his versatility. I love the Isaiah Simmons pick last year and his versatility. And you saw him really starting to understand, like, in last year's offseason with everything being virtual, a guy like Simmons will take a little bit longer because he's not just one position. He plays like all of the positions. So it's really reinforcing the back and the front and taking everything that works well from one and making them complement each other. Shore up the front and the back becomes easier to solve. Shore up the back, then the front becomes easier to solve. So you're trying to kind of create that situation where you're really defending the parts of the field that you have to. And with a guy like Kyler Murray at quarterback, who could be a constant threat to score quickly, you got to have a defense that can stop the pass. So it's really smart to be able to focus there.
The 2021 salary cap came out last week, about $16 million less than last year. How does that affect how the Cardinals moving forward after already adding a big sign in it and kind of piecing that all together, like you said earlier, with the rest of the moves that they have to make?
First, I don't think they made we all kind of knew the cap was going down. We just didn't know how much, right? So I think that it's not like they signed J.J. Watt and they're like, oh no, now we have to figure it out, right? You have a huge advantage. I think the Cardinals are in a really good, they're within striking distance. You've got a rookie quarterback that's a rookie deal for a quarterback, right? So you're not paying the premium for that position. You got your wide receiver solved, the wide out one solved. Anything now is upside. I don't know what's going to happen with Larry Fitzgerald, but there's a bunch of wide receivers that are in the market right now that you could probably find the right piece to complement DeAndre Hopkins without having to overpay. This is the type of offense where a running back, and I'm an analytics person, so I think running back's an important position, but this is not something, if you are a pass happy offense, you got to figure out the right people for your O-line and then really focus on, this is a team that plays 10 personnel more than any other team in the National Football League by like double. The next closest was the Bills and they were like 8% lower. It's like 14% for the Cardinals and like, you know, 6% for the Bills. And the interesting part about that is you don't need an O-line that's quite as stout as, like, say, a pocket passer would need because of Kyler Murray's mobility. And then your running back doesn't need to be like the premium running back. You don't need to go get Aaron Jones at all. You need to have the combination of a good enough O-line. So you have to get better at O-line. And then a running back that can execute, or multiple running backs that can execute the different strategies to make the pass work. So they're in kind of good shape. They're within striking distance. They've got, you know, all of the pieces there. It's going to be some keen free agent moves. And then, of course, we got to get a little lucky. This 16 is a tough spot to be drafted. Who knows what's going to happen in the draft, right? Mm-hmm. So figuring out kind of the pieces so that whoever you get in the draft is all upside. And then you really have something interesting, especially considering maybe Russell Wilson does leave the division. That would help a little bit, right? And then we don't know who's going to be necessarily the quarterback for the Niners. That could be good too, right? So there's a lot of potential upside. And then, of course, stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. You recently did your first edition of your mock draft, and it's a little bit different of a mock draft. It's you're trying to maximize each team's win potential in 2021. So it's not necessarily who you think they're going to take, but who they should take, essentially, in your opinion. Christian Darrisaw, offensive tackle out of Virginia Tech. You mentioned the offensive line. Why? What is it about the offensive line that you feel they need to just shore up, especially after taking a guy like Josh Jones last year, who I know you really liked as well?
Did. So first and foremost, I was not allowed to make any trades. So that, you know, that really hampers a person who does math, because you're like, oh, but there's so many efficiencies to be have, but whatever. So no trades allowed. But I went with a tackle, because when you look to see an area where you could really use a little bit of help to make a big difference quickly, it's got to be the O-line. And Darrisaw, the one I liked the most for the Cardinals, he had already been selected. I actually like the tackle out of Northwestern. Mm-hmm. He ran a blazing fast 40, which is all BS anyways, because who knows what, how, whatever. But, you know, like at the end of the day, what I liked about him was he's kind of like a tackle-ish guard, if that makes sense. Like he's okay, a little undersized, and his ability to kind of slide into the inside and stop a guy that's like, you know, a good interior pass rusher. You heard of any? Oh, Aaron Donald. You know, that's the kind of person that could learn how to really stop him. So Darrisaw is great too, but I it's hard with all these people opting out and trying to figure out their 2019 data into 2020. It's really about who can execute the concepts of creating the situation where a guy like Kyler Murray can just slang it and doesn't have to be running for his life every single time. So creating the opportunity to really like pick up those different pass protection concepts that are a little nuanced for this type of offense. And that, and by the way, when you come out in 10 personnel, like they don't think you're running the ball. So, mm-hmm. you know, they know you're not, right? Like it's, surprise, we're not going to run the ball. There's no running back on the field. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's how do you create higher probability passes and more success with them? You improve in the slot. And by doing that, you figure out like a little bit better for your tackle. So you can kind of get those, like maybe a tight end or a slot receiver. You know, Larry Fitzgerald's a legend, and you know, he can play as long as he wants. Like maybe he starts his quick path to 5 years to Canton this year, and then they could bring in something different. But if not, they can figure it out. Just get that tackle or tackle-ish guard just short up.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the NFC West, Matt Stafford coming in the division. It's already been a gauntlet adding him. Whether Russell stays or goes, who knows? The 49ers are getting much healthier, and we saw what that defense can do. With Matt Stafford, how does that affect what you see with how the Rams are able to do things moving forward?
So the deep pass will now be totally accessible to the Rams. Matthew Stafford, I'm kind of a Matthew Stafford lover too. I'm from Michigan, so you know, I've always thought he was underutilized, and you did see him create those deep passes. I'm a Lions fan, if that's a real thing, but I don't actually know if that's a real thing. I'm looking for another team. So if you know, Cardinals fans can submit their application so that I can come be a fan there. But the deep pass is what Matthew Stafford can do. He can use his arm angles and every angle possible and still with precision hit those 20 plus air yard attempts and really open up the field, spreading the field. It's kind of like what Russell Wilson's able to do, right? He's not quite as mobile or as able to, like Matthew Stafford's tough, but he's not, I mean, Russell Wilson just exceptionally mobile. Matthew Stafford's like a better Ben Roethlisberger, like when Ben Roethlisberger was good. He can hit those deep passes. He has the vision to be able to take those shorter passes and really make a lot with them. And it's going to be interesting to see how it makes this offense more multiple. It's, you know, I'm curious to see. The Rams have some cap constraints that I'm not sure how they're going to overcome, but between, you know, they've got two great receivers there, and they're going to have an interesting time figuring out like, how do we get a true deep threat? Because that's what if you can't use Matthew Stafford's deep ball, then you're wasting him. Right. You know, so you gotta get that deep ball going.
Cynthia, thanks so much for the time and the insight.
You're welcome.
That is Cynthia Freeland. We just got smarter when it comes to football, and this is the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Appreciate Paul Coro and Cynthia Freeland jumping on with us. Again, a lot going on this week in the state of Arizona, in the sports world as a whole. Seems like news is breaking every minute here with what's going on in the sports world. So I just wanted to wrap up the show, take a minute and just look at where the Diamondbacks are at. We're about halfway through spring training. The expectations outside of the Diamondbacks building, I don't think are very high. I saw that FanGraphs gave them a 2% chance to make the postseason. And I think that has a lot to do with outside factors and the fact that they didn't make a ton of moves this offseason. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I think they win 85 games this year. That is quite a bit higher, I think, than the projections that they're making right now. I think they'll be in the race for a postseason bid. And it's because two reasons. One, I'm not taking too much stock in last year because it was a 60-game season. And it's not so much the 60-game season. It's the late start. It's the athletes, as we know, are creatures of habit. And even if it's a you're out 3 weeks during the preseason or during spring training, there's a catch-up period that has to happen. Completely reworking that system last year, I just don't think that the Diamondbacks were built for something like that. There are teams that were better equipped, teams that already had much of their core already in place and were good to go, and they were good. Not saying that the Diamondbacks were the only ones that had to deal with the coronavirus last year and deal with the starting and stopping of the especially the beginning of the season. But when you look at a couple of things specifically in the rotation, and I'm going to go much deeper on this in Diamonds in the Desert. We're bringing that back, I believe, season number 3. Very excited to bring back that podcast. We'll talk all things in the state of Arizona for baseball, but it's going to be pretty D-back heavy, definitely. You look at a couple of things within the rotation. Madison Bumgarner has done many things in his career, achieved a lot, and experienced a lot. One thing he hasn't experienced is going into a new clubhouse since the Giants. He's been with the Giants his entire career. He's accomplished a lot with them. No matter what, there's going to be a transition period that has to happen for him, and that got cut short in spring training, and then it started up again. And then it stopped, and then it started up again, and then it was a summer camp. And I just don't think he ever really got his footing all that well. Luke Weaver coming off a much injured season where he was very good in 2019, but he only played about a quarter of the season before he had that elbow tightness, and they never had surgery or anything like that. But you come back and you really, especially an athlete with an injury having to rehab, structure is key here. The beginning of that season had no structure whatsoever. And then, you know, you look at some of these other starters. Zach Gallen did well. Merrill Kelly did well. Again, small sample size. If we're going to go, I'm not going to take a lot of stock in the negative. I have to not take a lot of stock in the positive. But we've seen Merrill Kelly be, especially since the back half of his first year a couple years ago, he has become a pretty steady option. Zach Gallen has been as advertised since the Diamondbacks traded for him. And you're seeing there haven't really been moves that have been made. They've done a couple small pieces here and there. I think the optimism, obviously, this is going to be kind of an obvious statement, but Starlin Marte is still on this team. I think there's a lot more optimism. And not just because that you have an all-star outfielder and a gold glove outfielder at the top of the lineup, but you also then can simplify Ketel Marte's role. As we're seeing right now, there are injuries with the Diamondbacks already. Cole Calhoun is out, should be ready for opening day, but might miss a little bit of time. The outfield depth, that will certainly help with that. Now, I think the reason that they traded him was the big contract that he or the big option that he had. And they didn't know what it was going to look like for not having fans in the stands, what their payroll was going to be, all of the financials that go into it. That made things really tough. The Diamondbacks were set up really well, especially for 2021, when a lot of things were coming off the books. Yasmani Tomas. But they had some big contracts coming off the books. They kind of pushed their chips into the middle of the table, and then the coronavirus happened. They were really well set up for 2020, 2021. I still think giving much of this roster almost a reset like they did when Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello came in is wise. If I'm a Diamondbacks fan, would I have liked to see more moves? Yes, definitely. But I think that they made some smart moves, adding some veteran depth to the back end of the bullpen, adding Asdrubal Cabrera. And who knows, there might be some other moves. I think they also trust their minor leaguers that are on the verge of being major league players much more than they did a couple years ago. I think there are closer to major league ready everyday guys that could come up and play a depth role this year and maybe even be starters in the next year or two. So I'm more optimistic than many when it comes to this. We're going to go much more in depth on this. And again, this is very much a team. There are stars on this team, but it's not like, okay, we know Paul Goldschmidt is leading the way with this one. We know AJ Pollock is. It's more of, we got solid ball players all around if you're the Diamondbacks. So I think that they can still compete. It's going to be a tough division. We're going to go much more in depth on this when we bring Diamonds in the Desert back, hopefully this week, maybe next week, but kind of a couple of resets. I'm excited. Claudia Faust is a seam head as well. I imagine she'll be joining me quite a bit. Also trying to line up some cool interviews that really no one, you're not going to hear anywhere else. So excited to bring back Diamonds in the Desert. Excited that you were here for the Brad Sesmatch show. I'll be here all week. Have a lot to get to. We're going to have Brandon Huffman on tomorrow. I'm sure we're going to dig more into this GCU-Iowa matchup. And who knows, maybe there's going to be some breaking news this afternoon with the Cardinals and see what's going on with them. So a lot to get to over the next couple of weeks. Excited to be here with you. And make sure to keep it here to Sports 360 AZ and the Brad Sesmatch Show.